As social creatures living on an inhabited planet, it's impossible to avoid association with fellow human beings. Even though some might prefer that, you really can't do it. You know, we have associations at work, at school, in the neighborhood, in our congregation. And as Christians, it's important that our dealings with other people be conducted in wisdom. As a matter of fact, if you want a title for the sermon, it is Wisdom in Matters of Friendship. And I organize this sermon for everybody, but primarily for our youth, our young people, preteens, teenagers. We have a goodly number in Dallas. I gave this a few weeks ago there, but it's a lesson that all of us can learn from. But young people, if you can learn it early, it can really help you as you move forward in your life and begin and get older. So it's a practical Christianity sermon, to say the least. Paul wrote to the Colossians, and although he was specifically referencing our conduct with those who he would call non-Christians or non-believers, it would also apply to Christian friends as well. So turn with me over to Colossians chapter 4, here in the introduction. Colossians chapter 4. And let's begin our reading in verse 5. Colossians 4, verse 5. Where it says, walk in wisdom towards those who are outside. Not part of, shall we say, the congregations at that time that Paul worked with. Redeeming the time. Verse 6. And let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Now, obviously, that is applicable for our brothers and sisters in Christ as well, that we want to let our speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you ought to know how to give an answer for each one. And we know the Bible also tells us that we should be able to give an answer for what? For the hope that lies within us. When people are asking us questions, we should be able to answer him. So, wisdom in matters of friendship. Now, in God's all-sufficient word, and it is all-sufficient, he provided the wisdom necessary whereby we can develop good relations with those around us, in our neighborhoods, again, at work or at church, and also avoid the pitfalls that too often destroy good friendships and good relationships. There's a particular book that spends a lot of time on this subject. I'm sure all of you know what that book is. Anybody want to guess? Yeah, Book of Proverbs. It's filled with this type of information, the Book of Proverbs. And as we're turning to that particular book, you can be turning to Proverbs 17. As we're turning to that book, let's first note what it says about the value of a good friend. And you young people here, I know that you are social and you like and enjoy having friends, whether it be at school, in your neighborhood, at church. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But you need to know which ones to really pick out and choose to be around. It's important to note that. Proverbs 17, beginning in verse 17, it says, a friend loves at all times. A friend loves at all times. So a friend is someone who can be a source of comfort. He loves at all times. That means when it says all times, what? He loves in the good times, or she loves in the good times. When things are going well and you're having a good, enjoyable time, or in bad times. Doesn't make any difference. They love you in the good and the bad if they're a true good friend. I had a friend growing up before I moved with my father. My dad, I moved with him when I was 16, 15. Anyway, I was a freshman in high school. But in junior high, 7th and 8th grade, half of my freshman year, I had a really, really good close friend. His name was Jackie Collins. And we did everything together. We could discuss anything. And again, in the good times or the bad times. He was someone I knew I could count on. He was a moral individual. as I look back on it. And he was willing to share his thoughts about things, and I would share my thoughts about things. And sometimes he'd say, well, Frankie, that may be correct, but you might want to look at it this way. You know, he was always polite, very friendly. Now, I will agree that probably 90% of the time he agreed with me. Okay. That's what often good friends do. But he was a good friend in the good and the bad times. And when I moved with my dad, I think the one person I really missed the most as far as friendship is concerned is Jackie. And we didn't stay in contact with each other. Back then, you know, we didn't call all that much. And back then, you may remember, if you made a phone call and talked about 5 minutes, it cost you $85. Remember those days? It was expensive. Here I am, freshman in high school. And neither of us wrote all that much, but I always wondered what happened to Jackie. And when I went back to visit my mother, I went back a number of times. This one time I decided I was going to go try to find Jackie. So I drove down to where he lived in Wallston, Missouri, where we were at that particular time. And the whole area is depleted. His house was gone, torn down. Where I lived was torn down. We both rented places there in Wallston. And I asked, I did know one young lady, Charlene Waddell, and I was able to track her down. I said, well, do you know what happened to Jackie? You know, where is he living? What's he doing? This was, obviously I was out of college by that time. And she says, last time I was in contact with Jackie was probably 7-8 years ago. And I have no idea where he lives. I think he's living somewhere in the St. Charles, Missouri area. And so I went and looked up all the Collins in St. Charles, and not one named Jackie. I called a couple of them just in case they were related. They had no idea who he was. So anyway, make a long story short, I never found out where he ended up, what he's doing. He might be pushing up daisies right now as far as I know. But I've always remembered him because of that close friendship that we had at that particular time. A friend loves at all times, Proverbs 17, verse 17. The latter part of that verse says, and a brother is born for adversity. And often within the family structure, if you're having a difficult time, family members are there to aid and help. That's why it says a brother is born for adversity. However, turn over to Proverbs 18, in verse 24. Proverbs 18, verse 24, where it says, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. It's a truism. A man or a woman who has friends must himself also be friendly. But notice the second part of that verse. It says, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. A brother, it says, is born for adversity. But there are some friends that would stick to you even closer than a brother if it's an honest, good friend and you've developed that relationship. So there's a value in having a good friend. And hopefully you do. Hopefully most of them have good morals and are associated in some respects with, not some respects, but associated with the church. So a friend can stick closer than a brother. Again, the value of a good friend. A friend is someone who can be a source of good counsel. Remember, he loves you whether it be good or bad at times. Notice Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27. That's not going to work, is it? Nope. Proverbs 27. And let's look at verse 9. Proverbs 27, verse 9. It says, ointment and perfume delight the heart. And the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. And as I mentioned, you know, even though Jackie and I were young at that particular time, you know, for our age, what we were experiencing, his counsel, using that term, or his input to me, was always of value. And I appreciated that. I had a bicycle when I lived in St. Louis. Jackie didn't. Jackie was bigger than I. taller and also more stocky. So I would ride on the handlebars of the bicycle, and then Jackie would pump me all over Wellston. And wherever we went, you know, he was always pumping the bicycle, and I was always riding on the handlebars. And we just had a delightful, delightful time together. But he always was willing to be there for me, but he was also willing to say, well, maybe it's not quite that bad, Frank, and explain his reasonings as to why. Proverbs 11. Statement about counseling in general. Proverbs 11 and verse 14 says, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So if there's a big decision to be made in your life, my life, it's wise to not just strike out on our own without any thought. We need to give a lot of thought to it. But it's also wise, especially if it's something important, that you bounce these ideas off of other individuals, especially people you respect, or individuals who have maybe the knowledge about what you're thinking about doing. And Jackie and I, again, we could bounce ideas off of each other, because a good friend cares for you. And so he'll try to give you good counsel, good advice. So who you hang around with is very important. I may have more to say about that later. Many of you remember Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong. And in his autobiography, he talked about who he hung around with before his conversion. He was in advertising. Anybody remember what he said he did, who he hung around with from the autobiography? He hung around with people who were successful. He always tried to be around people who were successful and good at what they did, because he wanted that knowledge and that understanding to kind of, quote unquote, rub off on him, or where he could, you know, grab that type of information. And that's a good thing to be mindful of. Like I said, I'll touch on that a little bit later. So a friend can be trusted to be a good source of good counsel and certainly a blessing. But having friends who are dependable is not always easy. It's just not. There are those who are called fair weather friends. Who are those individuals? In the good times, they're around you and want to be involved with you. My youngest son, Michael, had to learn that the hard way. He was always gregarious and willing to share anything that he had with his friends. You know, he would work and they'd go out and he would buy them something, buy them a, you know, something really expensive like a McDonald's or whatever. But later on, he said, you know, Dad, he says, they never, ever were willing to put out money to buy anything for, you know, the two or three of us who were together. And whenever things were difficult, you never saw them. But when things were going well, they were around. And when I was getting paid on Friday, they were always there. So having friends who are dependable isn't always easy. So consider some advice on the selection of friends. Moving on to another section of my sermon. Consider the advice on the selection of friends. People, number one, you do not want as friends. Be mindful, people that you do not want as friends. I got a number of them listed here. Number one, gossips. Gossips. Now, Proverbs 20 in verse 19 says, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. Other translations I like actually better. One says, therefore, do not associate with a gossip. The next two are awesome. Another translation is, therefore, do not associate with one who talks too much. This is my favorite, though. Do not associate with a big mouth. You know, people are just letting it all fly and like to hear themselves talk, and they know anything and everything about everyone. We have a situation like that in our neighborhood. Now, when we moved back after retiring, we moved back here from Ohio, living down in the Cedar Creek area, in a subdivision community called Pinnacle Club. As I've already mentioned to you, I always have loved golf since I was in high school. When I was full-time in the ministry, I may have gotten out two or three times during the summer. And many years would go by when I didn't play at all. And now that I'm retired, I'm trying to make up for lost time. So I do try to get out and play at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. And so I've gotten to know a number of the golfers. There are basically three groups that I golf with at different times. One's a morning group, another one's an afternoon group, etc. Right now I'm spending more time with the morning group as opposed to the heat of the afternoon. But as I got involved with these individuals, one guy, name is Casey, I'm sure you don't know him, so it's Casey, saw me talking with, I won't say this person's name, this individual and his wife. It was a nice, fun, enjoyable conversation. And afterwards, Casey came and said, "See, Frank, I try not to talk about anyone, but you become a friend, and I want to at least let you know up front the reputation of these two individuals. I will tell you what it is. It's the last thing I'm going to say." He says, "They are known as the gossips of Pinnacle Club. Friendly people." And he says, "They're easy to talk with, easy to be friendly with, but," he says, "people eventually come to the place that everything is superficial. Because," he says, "you'll find in time that they always are asking probing questions." Always asking probing questions. They want to know anything and everything that you're involved with. They drive around the community on their golf cart looking at your house. And you will tell people that, you know, they need to do a better at this job. They need to do a better job at this. They need to mow the lawn more often. And they like to just get the details, and they're willing to share it with anyone else who's around them. So I did find that to be the case, in case he wasn't lying. But I still talk with them. I'm still very friendly with them. They're very friendly with me. But if they begin to ask probing questions, it's amazing how I can easily change the subject. Oh, really? Well, how are things going in your life? What's happening over here? So what's sad is they have become known as that in the neighborhood, so very few people really just have a close association with. Everything is superficial. And so you want to be careful hanging around people who are gossips, because they'll take what you give to them and they're willing to share it with other people. So just be aware of that as the first point. Again, Proverbs 20, verse 19 says, "Therefore, do not associate with a gossip, someone who talks too much, or a big mouth." Just be aware of that. And you will eventually come to know if they are that way, and then you can, handle yourself accordingly. Second point, people you do not want to be as friends. I have two categories here at this one point. Someone who is short-tempered and given to violence. Someone who is short-tempered and given to violence. Proverbs 22, verse 24. "Make no friendship with an angry man. And with a furious man, do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul." And trust me, you can set a snare for your soul if you hang around these people. All you need to do is be around them when they get upset and angry and violent with someone that they're talking with and his two buddies, and you're there with him. Because I have seen, and I'm going to share an experience with you, I've seen fights develop where the person who was with the guy who was just short-tempered didn't want to fight, but his buddy was trying to get him involved with the raucous that was about to take place. I know you don't know some of these individuals. Matter of fact, you don't know them at all. But when I was still living with my mother, two of my uncles and my grandfather each had his own tavern or bar. We're talking about a tavern bar, not a cocktail lounge, okay? Where you had rough people come in to those joints. And my Uncle Vince, Uncle Tully, and my grandfather, like I say, each had his own particular location. And my mother worked for my Uncle Vince, and we lived behind his tavern, something was called the Barracks, two or three little apartments there. And so I'd come out and I'd walk across the back parking lot to go over and see one or two of my friends who lived across the street. And the parking lot was not paved. It was just, you know, big old stone rocks in the back of it. And one day, I'm going to guess that's probably about 8 or 9. I came out and I'm walking across the parking lot, and all of a sudden a guy by the name of Bill Tizon. Everyone knew Bill Tizon. He was kind of a biggish guy, one of those individuals who had the short temper and definitely given to violence. And there were about 2 or 3 guys that he worked with, and probably 3 times a week they would come, get off work, and they'd come to my Uncle Vince's tavern. And they would sit at a table and go through who knows how many beers. At that particular time, I don't know if you all remember it, but I do. Anybody remember the beer called Stag? Stag beer? Yeah. Well, they always drank Stag beer. Well, anyway, let me get on with the story. That's a sidebar. I'm walking across the parking lot, and all of a sudden, Bill Tizon and his 3 friends came out of the back. And Bill Tizon had a cue stick in his hand. Now, in the back of my uncle's tavern, there was this pool table. You know, you put, at that time, 50 cents in, pushed a lever, and out came the cue balls. And what in the world's going on here? So I kind of paused, and Bill Tizon had the big end of the cue stick in his hand, and you know, small end facing out. He said, "Okay, let's resolve this like men. You two, fight it out." And he was the leader. You know, he was the dominant personality. It was obvious by my standing there that they didn't want to fight. They'd known each other. But Bill Tizon already made up his mind. "You guys have an argument? Disagreement? We're going to settle this like men." And so they started wrestling, you know, and I called it just a slow dance. Because they didn't want to fight. Finally, they end up on the ground, and they're just kind of rolling around a little bit. And Bill Tizon takes this cue stick, and he starts beating both of them on the backs. "I said fight! Now stop, Bill!" And he said, "Well, get up and fight!" So they get back up. What do? Again? They start dancing, you know. They don't want to fight. They end up back on the ground. Bill Tizon takes the cue stick again, starts beating him over the back with this thin end, you know. And he said, "This is not fighting. If we're going to resolve this like men." And they started yelling, "Bill, stop hitting us." And so they get back up. Bill says, "You going to fight?" They said, "No." He said, "Okay, let's go back in and have another beer." That was the crowd that hung out at my Uncle Vince's tavern. But he was just short-tempered. Everything had to be resolved with a fight. Now, can you imagine being with Bill Tizon? And he's out in another bar, and he just gets upset about something or thinks somebody said something, and goes up and starts to fight with them, and he's got 3 or 4 buddies with him. And he starts to fight, and they want to fight. And you're sitting there with them, and you don't want to fight, but they drag you into it. It could be dangerous. It could be dangerous. So make no friendship, Proverbs 22:24, with an angry man, and with a furious man, do not go. Now, the one thing about Bill Tizon, when he was on his good behavior and, you know, talking, friendly as could be, buy you a beer, but that can change in a hurry. So be aware of that. People, especially you young people, know who you're going to hang around with. Those given to violence, Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 19. I'm not going to read it. You can put it in your notes. And if you want to read it, fine. You don't have to. But it's 10 verses that tells you about a violent man and what can happen and how it can impact you. So the second one, don't hang around with a short-tempered, violent individual. Third category. Advice on the selection of friends, people you do not want as friends. Those given to drinking and gluttony. Those given to drinking and gluttony. I've got a very sad story I'm going to share with you here. But first, turn to Proverbs 23, verse 20. Proverbs 23, verse 20. It says, do not mix with wine bibbers. Now, you're not talking about someone who has a glass of wine, or maybe a beer, or a cocktail every now and then. He's talking about wine bibbers. When it says wine bibbers, that means somebody who, you know, goes through a bottle or 2 or 3 of wine at a time. So you do not mix with wine bibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the gluttonous will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe the man with rags. Now, my 50-plus years in the ministry, I have seen where drunkenness has impacted relationships. I've seen marriages broken up because of drunkenness. I've also seen marriage broken up because of anger. But he just can't control his or her anger. But I've seen alcohol impact people so much so that, you know, they can't hold on to a job. They'll get drunk for 2 or 3 days or 4 in a row. Pretty soon, the boss just fires them. It's kind of rough on a wife and a couple of kids if she's married to somebody like that. You know, it's hard. It's rough. Because, you know, there needs to be an income. You need to have a good relationship. It's hard to do that when you're involved with somebody who, shall we say, is involved with being a wine bibber. But for you young people, let me give you a story. I moved into a particular church, as a matter of fact, it was my second pastorate, so I was still a fairly young minister. And I was there about maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and I got a telephone call from one of the members. He says, "Can I talk with you?" I said, "Sure, what's up?" He says, "I'm having problems with my son." And he had a son and 2 daughters. And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, he was a junior in high school." He says he's gotten involved with 3 other kids at school who overall are not bad, but they've got a really bad habit, and that is they go out and they buy beer or get someone to buy a beer for them. Then they drive around the country roads drinking their beer. Well, number one, young people, it's illegal to do that. He says, "So I've tried talking with my son," and his answer, "Oh, Dad, we're not getting into any trouble. We're not doing anything that's going to harm people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." You know, all the justifications that we had that you remember having when you were a teenager, right? And I remember having when I was a teenager. He said, "You know, I really could use some help. Would you mind talking with him?" And I'm thinking, I've been here 3 weeks. The kid doesn't know me from Adam. And I'm going to sit down with him for the first time and say, "Hey, we need to discuss you running around with your friends and drinking. How's that going to go over, right?" A little bit of wisdom involved here. So I said, "You know what? I'll tell you what let's do." He said, "Well, why don't you invite me over? I'm a new pastor. Invite me over for dinner. I can sit down with the table, my wife and I, and you meet your 2 daughters and your son, and we can discuss things and build a rapport." And I said, "Is anything he likes?" He says, "Yeah, he really loves baseball. He plays on the high school baseball team." I said, "Do you have any favorite teams?" He said, "Yeah, the Chicago Cubs." I said, "Awesome. Because I'm an avid St. Louis Cardinals fan." And that's like, well, you know, they're major head-on-head competition there. I said, "That will give us something to talk about and have fun with." And I said, "I'll try to build a rapport with your son and then begin to ask how things are going and blah, 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 blah." He said, "That's a good idea." He said, "I'm going to be out of town for a week, week and a half on business." He said, "I'll be back." And he told me the date. He said, "When I get back, I'll have you and your wife over for dinner." I said, "Great." I didn't know who the kid was. He attended church with his family, but I had not met them. Anyway, about 4 days later, he's on his trip. He calls me. And he said, "Mr. McCready," he says, I could see the emotion in his voice, and I could see he was crying. I said, "What's up, man?" And he said, "You really seem to be bothered." I said, I just want to inform you that my son was killed. You know, yesterday, actually, what he said, an automobile accident. I said, "Oh, man, I am so, so sorry." And he shared with me the details and what the police said they thought was the problem. So evidently, after school, same thing. You know, his friends end up with a six-pack of beer. And there are 4 of them, you know, his son and the other 3 kids. He says the police feels they were driving in the car, the other part of Indiana. You've got all of you know what little narrow roads are like, right? Remember the narrow roads? They had the concrete abutments that would go over a little creek. Road goes on, and even narrowed more, and you had these big concrete abutments that you'd cross over the creek and then continue on. And he said the police said they feel that they each had a beer. There were 2 left. His son was riding in the passenger seat. There are 2 other kids in the back, and then the driver. driver was big man of campus because he had a car. And he said they felt that they were down to the last two beers. They wanted to share it. And evidently somebody behind the driver, you know, said, give me a swig. The driver was drinking. So he took the beer. This is what the police officer felt happened. Was taking it back to give to the guy behind him. Now, you're driving. What happens when you do this? You know, the car just moves a little bit. And when he looked up, he said he hit that abutment. He said because there was no brake, no brake signs whatsoever. And they hit that abutment head on, more so on the passenger side of the car. His son was killed, and the kid behind him was killed. The driver survived, and the person behind the driver survived. And needless to say, it was a very, very, very difficult time. It's as I've told people, you know, children are to bury their parents, not parents, their children. And I know that many have gone through that. It's a very sore trial. And it took them quite a while to work through that, both the dad and the mom, and, you know, the two sisters. They lost a brother, junior in high school, because he got caught up with his friends and he wouldn't listen to his father. We tried to talk him into not doing this. This thought pops into my mind. Anybody know what the fifth commandment is? Honor your father and your mother. What's the rest of it? It's the first commandment with promise. That your days may be long. You know, if this kid would have just listened to his father, paid attention to the instruction being given, which was quite good, by the way, he might be alive today with his own grandchildren. But he didn't. Just that one short mistake cost him his life. It caused a lot of pain and agony for his father, his mother, his two sisters, and also the rest of the family, you know, the cousins and uncles. It was terrible. So don't hang around with those who are given to drinking, even if they're not getting drunk as a teenager. It's just potentially going to be very hazardous. Now, how many have done that, driving a car while drinking with friends, and survived? Probably many. But there's just that one potential difficulty or chance of it not happening and not surviving. Next one, who you don't want to be as friends, those given to change. Those who are given to change. Proverbs 24, verse 21. Proverbs 24, verse 21. It says, my son, fear the Lord and the king, and do not associate with those given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin those two can bring. Now, we need to understand when it says those given to change, it's not talking about change from the standpoint of changing something in your life from bad to good. I mean, conversion is a change, is it not? You stop sinning, start doing those things that are correct. You begin to build godly character as opposed to the wrong kind of character. So it's not talking about change in that sense, but those that are given to change, they're affected by change for change's sake. And when I first read this and looked at a couple of commentaries, actually, first thing came to my mind was individuals that I know who were given over to fads. This summer is this, next summer is that, following summer is something else. And, you know, there's no stability. Just everything is faddish. Just be aware of that. So it's change for the sake of change. Always changing. Always things being different. Matthew Henry says, out of a peevish discontent with that which is and a fondness for novelty and a desire to fish in troubled waters. Meddle not with those that are given to change, either in religion or in a civil government, always wanting to change. My grandmother was that way. She was a religious hobbyist, just a religious hobbyist, changing back and forth, back and forth. And this was my father's mother. She died at, I think it was 101. And I told my wife, she died at 101 because she was too ornery to die. she was quite a character. Matter of fact, she told my son, you know, she was always this religious fanatic in many ways. So he had this new knowledge of the truth that was so clear to him that anybody could understand it. So he decided to tell his mother about it. And when he finished, she says, "Son, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy." She was set in her own ways, had her own ideas, was a religious hobbyist, but this is one religion she had no reason, no desire to have as a hobby. So, you're crazy. You're crazy. Matthew Henry goes on to say, "Those that are of relentless, factious, and turbulent spirits commonly pull mischief upon their own heads wherever they are by all these changes that take place in their life." There's no stability, Matthew Henry brings out. So be aware of those that, you know, they feel this way today, and you think, okay, that seems pretty good. And tomorrow they feel a different way, and they change, and, you know, "I like this dress. No, I think I like this dress. No, I like this dress," you know, fattishly speaking. So just be aware of, try to find somebody who's a little more stable, not just given to change for change's sake, especially religion and religious backgrounds. Again, Proverbs 24:21, it says, "Their calamity will rise suddenly." So just be aware of that. Number five, I believe this is the fifth one. People you don't want to associate with as friends: liars, those who are untrustworthy, and those who are inconsiderate. Proverbs 25, verse 18. Proverbs 25 and verse 18. Liars, those untrustworthy, and those who are inconsiderate. Three categories in this particular point. Proverbs 25:18 says, "A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow." Now, a club would be bad enough by itself, right? Or a sword. Or a sharp arrow. But the proverb says, he's like the club, sword, and the sharp arrow. It tells you what difficulties he can cause in a relationship if you are involved with him. If you find somebody who is a constant liar and you know it, I would stop hanging around with that individual. Because pretty soon that can rub off on you. I'm not saying the individual can't make mistakes. I'm not talking about people who are perfect. We're talking about, you know, shall we say, character issues that you need to look at. Verse 19 says, "Confidence in an unfaithful man," untrustworthy, "confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint." You know, when you're counting on somebody who you think is a very faithful friend, and when time of trouble rolls around, you never see him again, right? Fair-weathered friend, he's like a bad tooth or a foot out of joint. Now, when I retired, I wanted to be involved with building. I love building. I just always have. I built a home in Florida. I built a home in Ohio. I renovated our house in Dallas when I pastored here, and I built a house when we came back. Not doing the specific labor, but, you know, working as a general contractor. Now, I did help put the shingles on our home in Florida when I was a younger man. I hired somebody to help me put a cedar siding on our home in Ohio. But when I came back here, I was a little bit too old to do a lot of those things. So I worked as a subcontractor. And the first, I'd say 3 or 4 months, the project here went really well. Really, really, really well. We were actually ahead of the game. And I had people tell me, "Frankie," said, you're lucky because it's hard to get people down here where we are to show up when they say they will. They'll say they'll be there and they don't show up. And you call them, they say, oh, yeah, something came up, I'll be there next Friday. And they never show up. And I found that to be the case last half of building the house. And that's not good because they're going to be there, and so you get things prepared for them when they arrive, and then they never show up. It's like a foot out of joint and a bad tooth. A gentleman I've gotten to know somewhat in where we live, lives around the corner from us, and he wanted to put a patio, stone patio with a little bit of a waterfall in the back of his home. And I was talking with him, he says, Frank, I have contacted 6-7 different contractors to have them come out here and give me a bid on this project. He says, 5 of the 6 said they would come out and give me a bid, never showed up. One guy showed up, looked at it, said, I'll go home and calculate and I'll get back with you. Never got back with me. Never got back with me. Called him up, he always had something as an excuse. He said, I am ending up having to do it myself, which he did. He did a great job. But he didn't want to do it. He's not that young a man, but he did a good job. Really, it looks good. And another positive, and he saved himself a good deal of money. Right? All he had to do was buy the stone, etc. He rented a mini backhoe to help dig out part of the area. And he said he probably saved $5,000-$6,000 by doing it himself. He said, but I didn't want to do it myself. And he was in a financial position where he had the money easily to do it without hurting himself. But he ended up having to do it. And I tell you what, that is something that is so frustrating. I don't know if any of you have experienced that, trying to get somebody to do a job for you who said they'll do it and they don't. It can be very painful. I actually had the trim package, you know, delivered for the house because the guy was going to come in and do the trim work. And he had already done a little work for me, so I felt I could trust him, but he never showed up. I'd call him, he said, well, I'll be there, such, he never showed up. I finally had to hire another man to do the trim work. All along, all my trim material was sitting in the garage. And, you know, thankfully I could lock it up, but not everybody can lock it up, their stuff, when they have it delivered. And it can be stolen. Now, Pinnacle Club is a gated community, so it's hard to get in and rip things off. But Witten Homes, Mr. Witten, builds quite a few houses in that area. And we got in our newsletter from the Homeowners Association that Tom Witten wants to know, or if you can inform him, do you know of anybody who basically was driving out from Forest Glen with a truckload of plywood. He had had about 75, 80 pieces of plywood delivered that were in the garage. Didn't have a door in it. And over the weekend, some body or bodies stole every single piece. Do you know how much plywood costs today? It's outrageous. He lost thousands of dollars. And so that can be very frustrating, when, to say the least, when you have to deal with people who are untrustworthy or inconsiderate. It's Proverbs 25, 18 and 20 brings out. We didn't read verse 20. Let's look at that. Proverbs 25 and verse 20 says, is like one who takes away a garment in cold weather, and like vinegar on soda is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. Says things, but doesn't necessarily mean it. The sort of friends you want, you find in Proverbs 13:20. Proverbs 13:20. It says, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. So he who walks with wise men will be wise. And that reminds me again of Mr. Armstrong. He said he tried to walk with wise men, people who were successful, that he could learn from them. He looked for mentors in the business world. not wrong to try to be an apprentice, you know, as a young person. My sons, Rick and Scott, my oldest boy and my youngest boy, were very greatly blessed. When we moved to Dallas, and they both attended Coppell High School, Rick was a junior when he was offered an apprentice position with one of our members, Daniels. I think it was first, Chuck Daniels, who worked at IBM there at Luna and 635. And Rick jumped at the opportunity. So he worked his junior year and his senior year with Chuck Daniels at IBM, which was a very wonderful experience for him, to say the least. And the nice thing is that when he went off to Ambassador College, his brother Scott moved into that position. So he also got 2 years of being an apprentice with Chuck Daniels at IBM. Great opportunity for my older two boys. And they were able to, shall we say, walk with people who had wisdom or understanding in a particular arena. And they both ended up in that type of business. Now, my older son, moved out of it and got into sales. But Scott, you know, he got his degree from Ambassador College in computer science. Learned all kinds of things from Chuck. And when he graduated from Ambassador College, he got into a position immediately with EDS. Anybody familiar with EDS in Dallas? I think maybe they've sold that company now. He worked there for a number of years. And he moved on to another company, got involved with internet security, which is a huge field. And as Scott says, as long as the Chinese are around, I'll always have a job. Trying to make sure things stay secure. So they were blessed with that. So, you know, if you had an opportunity to apprentice with somebody while you're in school, to learn what they do, their trade, it just gives you good experience of watching people work and how they handle themselves, etc. So, again, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. So you want to find individuals who have a little bit of wisdom. Proverbs 13 and verse 14. Proverbs 13 verse 14 says, "The law of the wise is a fountain of life, to turn one away from the snares of death." So wisdom can turn you away from the snares of death. I think of this young lad, junior in high school. If he just listened to the wisdom of his father, he would have been turned away from the snares of death. There would have been no funeral, at least not at that time. So you want to make sure you hang around with people who have good character, a little bit of wisdom in their life. They're not going to have total wisdom as a, shall we say, a junior in high school, but you can tell. You can tell. Trust me. I could, when I was in high school, I could tell those who were the decent kids and those who were not the decent kids. I knew who the good guys were, and I knew who the bad guys were. And I knew a number of girls who were attracted to the bad guys. Girls don't be attracted to the bad guys. They will get you into trouble, unfortunately, too many ways. I'm going to wrap up this part of the sermon in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I thought I had enough time to cover all my material when I was in Dallas, when I was giving it there, and I realized if I continued, I'd go about half an hour overtime. So I stopped here, and I will be finishing the sermon in the second half when I do the rounds again. I speak at Dallas, Fort Worth, East Texas, and Lawton. So when I do the rounds again, we'll get into the second one. Proverbs 15:33. Please remember this. As Paul has said, and we've been reading, the wrong kind of friends can be a corrupting influence, and even corrupt us. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. Don't kid yourself, is how I would say it. Don't kid yourself. Evil company corrupts good habits. Awake to righteousness and do not sin. For some do not have the knowledge of God, and I speak to your shame. So don't be deceived. Don't kid yourself. Evil company corrupts good habits. Good company develops good habits. You could say that would be the core of the message that I'm giving. And so the few young people who are here, I hope you will listen carefully and take these words of wisdom, not mine. You know, we've read them from the Word of God because it will stand you in good stead as you move forward in your life. And I know that your parents, all your friends here, want you to be very successful in life. I know for my three sons, Rick, Scott, and Michael, I've always wanted them to be successful and to do well. For any number of reasons, for their own benefit and also for the benefit of dad and mom. You know, when we get older, they can take care of us. That's supposed to be a joke. But, you know, I'm very pleased with my boys. They've done pretty well in their lives. So we'll break it off right there, the advice on the selection of friends. We'll pick it up next time on the advice on maintaining good friendships. Looked at the negatives and tried to learn from those. We'll look at some of the positive benefits of maintaining good friendships.